As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Wind-Up.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field! It is out of here!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
You're listening to The Roundtable on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 87 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby. I'm here with Anna McCullough, and we have another introduction to the Roundtable Extended Universe, Katie Wu. How are you doing, Katie Wu?
I am well, guys. Very happy to be here with you all. Glad to do this in early April, where we still have most of our stamina, and I haven't reached, you know, August despair. So this is good. We're starting out on an optimistic note here.
Fresh. We are fresh. Fresh as daisies. Andy, how are you? Well, not Andy's never fresh as a daisy. Andy's got the ass. I don't even know what about.
I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm okay, Grant. I've been better and I've also been worse. So yeah, we'll get through it.
All right. Just a little programming note. We are recording this on Tuesday. It's coming out on Wednesday. So if we are talking for like 20 minutes about the Marlins and we aren't referencing their game on Tuesday night, that's why. That's why. So we apologize for that.
We should do a draft of whose UCLs we believe in the most and just hope they make it to tomorrow.
Ooh.
Segue. Because, we're going to talk about pitcher injuries and the rash and the conspiracy theories and not the conspiracy theories. But the dead certainty that some people have that it's the pitch clock to blame. And yeah, so between now and Wednesday, there could be a couple sproings and kerfluies.
All spring, guys were getting hurt, getting banged up. You know, Lucas Giolito went down. Kodai Senga went down. Justin Verlander's got a sore shoulder. You're already starting the season. We're like Max Scherzer, Clayton Kershaw, Jacob deGrom, they're all recovering from injuries, you know. So we were like aware, like things are going haywire. Gerrit Cole shows up with elbow inflammation kind of for the first time. And then in like the first fortnight of the season, you get this, you know, 1-2-3 of Yuri Perez, Spencer Strider, and Shane Bieber. You know, so Perez and Bieber both gonna get Tommy John surgery. Strider has UCL damage. He's already had one Tommy John, so it's unclear if he's gonna need a procedure, you know, but it doesn't sound good. And so that's prompted a lot of discussion about what's causing this. And I think that there was, you know, probably gonna be a fairly holistic, global, you know, talk about it. And then the union decided it was the pitch clock. That led to the standard issue bickering back and forth between the league and the union about whether it's the pitch clock, which I don't know. It just felt so like small, like just so like what are we doing? I don't know. Someone else talk. I just was kind of irritated by the whole thing.
It's such an easy thing for people to just correlate and causate. And I don't even know what that means. I just read it on a news group in 1998. but like it's it's just so, it's like when the president's new and the gas prices go up or down, everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's what it is. And it's just so easy to say if X, then Y. I'm not convinced, and more importantly, a whole lot of pitchers are not convinced, and they're a little ticked at the union, or at least willing to push back on that narrative.
Yeah, we were talking to Miles Michaelis in the Cardinals clubhouse. He's the Cardinals player rep, and I thought he did a really insightful explanation on where the Players Association came from, explaining that the union essentially wanted more time on the pitch clock because it's only been implemented for a year. And there hasn't really been any feedback or data, if you will, on if this actually could impact guys. So I think from Miles' perspective, it was, let's just see the results. We're rushing into something. But from my perspective, do I think the pitch clock is why so many players are coming up with so many injuries? I'm going to lean towards no. I'm probably going to go with pitchers are throwing harder with nastier stuff and more torque and more arm movement than they ever have before. And you're seeing the effects of the incredible stress that puts on a player's body.
We all know why Josh Johnson broke down, Mark Pryor broke down. It was the pitch clock. You know? Like they were, it was just in their head. I mean, I think like pitching is an inherently unhealthy act. You should not do it. It is bad for your arm. And as Katie said, the way that the league, and not even the league per se, but like the sport, let's not put it directly at the commissioner's office because I don't think that's exactly what's going on. But the sport has come to incentivize velocity, velocity, velocity. And that's velocity with fastballs, which are being thrown harder than ever, velocity with breaking balls, which are being thrown harder than ever. You know, like 87 mile an hour curveballs are like a thing. When I started covering baseball, like you had starters who just sat 87 and they threw two seamers, right?
Oh, the Cardinals still have that. Don't worry.
Yeah, that's a great point. Katie's like, what is all this velo everyone's talking about? Like 92 is fast. You spot a fastball down and away. What could go wrong? Yeah. So like this just push towards velocity, right? It's like Joel Sherman had a great reference in the New York Post today about the quote from Jurassic Park, where it's like the doctors were debating so much about whether, you know, they could do this and they didn't just think it was what they should do, you know?
The shorthand is the butterfly effect. A butterfly can flap its wings in Peking, and in Central Park you get rain instead of sunshine.
I'm butchering the quote, but you know, Dr. Malcolm says it. Remember that wise thing Dr. Malcolm says? I think it was Dr. Malcolm. Could have been Dr. Grant. There's a lot of doctors in that movie.
Oh, man, I kind of want to bust into my Jeff Goldblum.
Wow, that's one I don't have in my bag, so you should try it.
It's pretty interesting about the velocity.
That's pretty good.
There's another example.
Alex Wood had a tremendous thread. I don't know if you saw it, but he was on Twitter and he was talking about just, hey, what he's thinking about. And one of the things he comes to is that when he came into the league, into professional baseball, as soon as the season ended, I usually wouldn't touch a baseball until at least December. And I definitely wouldn't be off a mound until at least sometime in January. And he goes on to talk about just, it's different now. Everyone has to grind. It's not like you've got one guy who's a fitness freak and he's pitching more than the other guys. If you aren't doing that, you're not surviving in this, you know, the culling of minor leaguers and stuff like that. That's interesting. And I also wonder, I haven't really matched up the timelines, but is this the first generation of players who are the one sport players? Are we kind of getting to that where this is the culmination of, no, you're not playing football. You're not playing basketball. You're doing travel ball. And then you're doing travel teams that do travel. And then you're doing travel teams within your city. Like you're just going nuts with baseball all the time year round. Like I'm seeing it with my kids, the push to just do like softball year round. And you have to choose by the time you're 10 or 11. Is this all those miles on the arm, even if you're limiting the curveballs, even if you're limiting the breaking pitches they're throwing, you're still maximizing velocity and all that stuff. Maybe this is a result.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the points you make about the one sport athlete, this generation, I think, is a generation past that. Like, I think that was fairly common, you know, 10 years ago. I think it is, the difference is, you know, if you like theoretically. Okay, so if you open up a book that's coming out on May 7th, The Last of His Kind, Clayton Kershaw and the Burden of Greatness, please get your pre-orders in. In like the first few chapters, you'll see that he was playing baseball all summer long, right? He was playing travel ball. What he wasn't doing was hulking up with weighted balls and crow hopping and throwing into brick walls and stuff like that. He was like learning how to pitch. Now, again, pitching very unhealthy for the body. You can see it in Kershaw, right? Like he's been banged up basically because he's pitched for a living, but he's never had a torn UCL. You know, he's never dealt with any of that because he sort of pitches like a normal human used to 20 years ago, right? So it's taking these training methods and making it so like, you know, it has to be, this is the only way you get noticed is velo. You know, I don't blame the players for this at all. They're reacting to what the environment is rewarding. I don't even necessarily know if I blame the teams because they're trying to win. The problem feels like it's so far down the road that getting back to fixing it feels pretty challenging at this point.
This is not an easy fix. This is not, oh, so the best pitchers in the game are getting hurt. Let's stop that. This is, I think, the trickle-down effect, the snowball effect of all of these underlying things that, you know, were taking place 5-10 years ago that's evolved baseball to where it is right now. I mean, if you're not throwing gas and you don't have a sweeper or the power changeup or whatever weird names were coming up for different kinds of pitches at this point, you're behind the times. And when you're a player that's trying to get drafted or play collegiate baseball and you're trying to get noticed, you need to have those things. You need to have the velo. You need to have the stuff, the spin. And if you want to be successful in the major leagues, that's what guys are looking at. That's what, you know, development, player development staffs are looking at. That's what teams are looking at, because that's just the trend of the game. So I don't know how you minimize the trend of the game or just kind of look at it and revert back to it. I don't think you can at this point. I think this was just a matter of time before the industry as a whole realized, okay, how we're doing things has led to some unnatural reactions to the body that humans physically cannot handle. How can we fix that? And I don't think it's something that you can just fix.
One thing that's going to prevent there being a Manhattan Project to fix this sort of thing, a Manhattan Project of UCLs, is that there's like a almost an unlimited supply of guys with nasty, crazy stuff, where you're talking like, if you watch a Division I game now, the whole staff is throwing mid-90s. The whole staff is, it used to be that when Ben McDonald was throwing 98 with the girls, oh my gosh, Ben McDonald and Mark Pryor. And now it's just, you've got just unlimited guys with stuff and with, you don't need 7 innings, 8 innings from your starters anymore. You can just get guys and, oh, this guy breaks. Well, we'll move to this guy for 2 innings. You know, it's different now where it's not as top heavy with the velocity and the stuff. So many people have the stuff.
I do agree that there's more stuff than ever. However, most of the gentlemen below the big leagues have no idea where that baseball is going. And that is a particularly brutal product to put forward. I mean, there's nothing worse than watching a guy walk the park, right? Like watching two guys who just have no fucking clue where the ball's going, right? And so you do get to a point where, yeah, you can, if you keep breaking guys and you keep dipping into the minors and you're not emphasizing command, which teams have kind of stopped doing, especially with relievers, you're going to keep shuttling guys up who, like, there's still going to be a pipeline, but is there going to be a pipeline of good actual pitchers, people who actually know how to pitch and aren't just being incentivized to throw the living shit out of the ball? And that is a problem that I think teams, it's going to get to a point where it's like, okay, we don't have guys who can get outs. All we have are guys who can, like, strike, you know, can just throw the shit out of the ball. And that's kind of, if it continues on this trend, that's where it's going to get to in a few years, right? And you can see some of the teams are, like, starting to talk more about command or starting to, you know, pursue, like, relief. Like, for a long time, the way to build bullpens, and it still, you know, kind of works, is, like, just find me 7 guys who throw really hard and we hope that 3 of them will be good this year and who the heck knows, you know, and they'll break and whatever. We'll just keep sort of going through the pipeline. And you can keep doing that, but you got to keep going and going and going. And eventually, you know, you kind of run out of guys who actually can get the ball over the plate of that type of player, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. With Katie joining us, there was a 99.9% chance that we were going to mention Jordan Hicks at some point. And watching him pitch – before this season and watching him pitch now has been a revelation. I know it's just a couple of starts plus the spring, but he's taken velocity off. He's not throwing 103. He's committed to the bit where he's going to be a starter and he wants to go deeper in games. And he's like putting the ball where he wants to. He's not walking, you know, everyone. It's a 3-2 count. He's like, all right, I got to fill up the zone. And he does. It's amazing to me. Like, I always just thought it was a... when someone couldn't throw strikes, it was a muscle memory thing. It was just something, you know, their neurons aren't quite lined up yet. Maybe experience will give that to them. But no, you know, sometimes it really is just, I can throw 103. They're telling me to throw 103. I'm going to do it, and it works. So why wouldn't I? And it's fascinating to me. So yes, with this increase in velocity, you have a command is deprioritized. And I don't know. I'd like to see that balance out a little bit more.
Yeah, I think with Jordan Hicks, it's such an interesting case because the stuff has obviously always been there. And I thought the Cardinals pitching staff, their pitching coaches, did a really nice job with Hicks in the beginning of 2023 when he came out and was just flat out terrible. No slider command, couldn't spot the sinker, velo was out of control. And even when he tried to take some off, he was still all over the place. And it came to the point where he almost was optioned to the minor leagues. But they worked with him, got him back, and turned him into a closer. And he was pretty good. Not many opportunities to close with a last place team. But in those slim chances, pretty lights out. But Jordan Hicks had always wanted to be a starter, right? And I think that he was able to do so with the Giants, a new staff, and they actually gave him an offseason and a spring to become a starter. Whereas the Cardinals were like 2 weeks before the 2022 season, hey, Jordan Hicks, go be a starting pitcher for us and we're going to build you up through April in Major League games. Great strategy. You see kind of the effects of pitchers who have the stuff and have the velocity, but can also temper and be successful with the right buildup plan. And maybe it goes to show, like Jordan, no one's talking about how Jordan Hicks has taken a couple miles per hour off his velo. People are talking about how nasty Jordan Hicks is as a starting pitcher. And the overall command of that sinker-slider combo, which has always been really, really strong when it's right, I think pays off. So maybe that's a good blueprint. You take a couple miles off the velo, you still command your stuff. It's still nasty. Maybe that works out.
People are talking about it, like on Twitter, but it's with the tone of, uh-oh, his velocity's down. You know, what's going on?
When
here?
You said people are talking about it, I thought it was Grant's Twitter account and Grant's Records Twitter account just having a conversation back and forth. Just being like, well, you know, I got this copy of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, and they think that he's really going to be great this year. Anyway,
I've got a pretty good copy of Deja Vu. Like, it's like the leather embossed on the front. It's really nice. Really nice.
Can I do one more Kershaw thing?
Yeah. Fire away.
This is what I'm here for.
What's the book called?
Who cares?
Who cares?
I wrote a story about this actually last year. Maybe it was 2 years ago. So like, I understand, right, the argument that folks make about why the velocity has gotten to this point and why you have to throw these ridiculous, you know, 92 mile an hour splitters and stuff like that is because hitting's never been better. Right. Hitting. And it's totally true. Like, it's not, we shouldn't compare them to like what Greg Maddux was doing. Right. They were facing different things. Right. However, Clayton Kershaw, he throws three pitches. Right. He throws a fastball that for the last several years has been about 90 miles an hour. He throws a slider that's about, you know, 86 to 87 that kind of functions as a cutter. Don't tell him it's a cutter. He hates when you call it a cutter. It's kind of a cutter. And then he throws a curveball. He throws a curveball about 20 to 25% of the time. But most of the time he gets people out with fastballs down to the glove side quadrant and sliders down to the glove side quadrant. Just over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. That's how he gets people out. He throws essentially to one quadrant, two pitches. Why does it work? Because the deception is delivery, because he repeats his delivery, because his misses are close, because he executes the basics of pitching, right? And I know that that's an incredibly hard thing to do, right? Like, he's a freak Hall of Famer for a reason. But it's so fascinating for me to watch the way the game is being taught is like, just get your best stuff, throw it as hard as you can down the middle and kind of see where it goes. And then there are still ways to get the best in the world out just doing the same thing. Clayton Kershaw had an extremely compromised left shoulder last year. He had the second lowest ERA in the sport, doing the same thing he's done for 15 years. It's possible for there to be another way. It's hard. It would take a lot of work, but it's not like it's not the only way to get people out, if that makes sense.
We're not that far removed from Bartolo Colon. You know, I mean, like, seriously, like, right. You know, different shapes on his fastball. He's just chucking it where he wants to go. I mean, that's almost another lifetime ago, but not really.
Gerrit Cole made a point yesterday, and it's actually, I was having a conversation with John Smoltz, and he kind of said something similar. What it was like, you can't be a starter now and throw 200 innings with like a 4.25 ERA, right? Well, again, Cardinals. We love the Cardinals, don't we, folks? But like for a good team, the Cardinals have been a very good organization, so we shouldn't shit on them too much. But for a team that has like championship aspirations, right, there you're not going to find a starter with 200 innings of 4.25 ERA. You're just not, because they have parceled out those innings to relievers. They just, you know, they're telling the guy, give me 175 innings of 3 ERA ball over that every time. There has to be some sort of organic change where teams recognize that, like, the Bartolo Colon type eating those innings, like, that has value. That has to have value. Otherwise, you're just going to keep going down this path where guys just break and break and break.
I think it's also, like, not that bad of a product to watch, like, consume. Like, honestly, if you're talking, I watched Blake Snell, his first start with the Giants last night. He is a talented pitcher. And I think I honestly think he's better at pitching than people give him credit for. I did a whole deep dive into the stats on it. He's missing a lot on purpose, trying to get his stuff to play and tempt people, but he doesn't have the quite pinpoint command of Clayton Kershaw. But it's also unwatchable, right? Like, unless he's just dominating, it's a 3-2 count. Yeah, you know, I knew this going in. He's a good pitcher. He's an asset to his team. Almost every season he's been around. Just it's tough to watch. So the product of a guy that just goes out and, you know, because I've got that one track mind, I mean, this Ryan Vogelsong, you know, he would just go out and
Tim Hudson.
Yeah, Tim Hudson. That's a better one, because Vogelsong kind of did the same thing with 3-2 counts all the time. But Tim Hudson, you're just going out, you're attacking guys, you're filling up the zone. That is a better thing to watch, I think, and more enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, the argument too, like, well, Tim Hudson didn't have to pitch in this era. I don't know, Logan Webb does. I mean, right? They're relatively similar, right? Maybe. I don't know. Two seamers down.
Yeah. I want funky movement in the spots that you're trying to throw it in. We need more of those guys. Guys who are, I'm trying to think, Jeff Supan. Is he on the Cardinals right now?
Give it time.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper Polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech Chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima Crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB show.
The Cardinals kind of like, it's interesting. They looked at how they were developing pitching, getting pitching to the big leagues, right? And said in the offseason, like, oh, we need to really change the way we operate. Then they went and signed, you know, Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson. And so, you know, yeah, you are what you like, right? But like, how is an organization like that, like caught in sort of maybe kind of behind the times, trying to adjust to being like within the path when everyone agrees that like, oh, this path is leading to ruin?
Well, say what you want about the Cardinals. They are consistent. I think it's difficult for them, and their president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, has said this. They got so used to winning that they were maybe operating with a sense of arrogance, which, you know, I've been around this organization for 3 or 4 years. I could see that. But when you're looking at the Cardinals and how they develop pitching, I mean, what, 15 years ago, John Mozeliak and his group kind of changed how you drafted and developed players. And that was on both sides of the ball, position and pitching. The problem is everybody else caught up to that model and everyone else started taking in the modern trends. And the Cardinals were one of the very last teams to adapt to very common concepts like swing and miss is good, is not a concept that I think is personally hard to understand. But they were so against it because they were really successful in their model, which was weak ground ball contact, great defense, quick outs. So it was the Cardinal way to do things. And when the game kind of passes you by in terms of the analytic approach, all of a sudden you're left thinking like, what do we do? And the Cardinals, to their credit, they're not sellers. They don't rebuild. So I think they were just kind of operating under the pretenses of, we've been drafting good pitching and there's been a problem developing them. Let's go get a couple of stopgap guys that we know we like their makeup, try to patchwork this rotation, get Sonny Gray, which I actually thought was a great signing for them, exactly what they needed for that number one guy, and maybe start to remodel our player development. That's a big reason I think Chaim Bloom came in, was to kind of assist with that new age trend that they seem to be lacking. You know, I can understand why they went the way that they did with their rotation. I can also understand the skepticism that follows, but I think for the Cardinals, it's been kind of a wake-up call for many reasons last year. And a big one was, wow, we're really behind the times when it comes to pitching development. How can we fix that?
You can really draw a distinction, when Major League Baseball had StatCast, just in every ballpark, and the teams had all this data to run their proprietary stuff. 2015 to 2016, you saw teams that were gap-to-gap teams that could put the ball where they ain't, and those dried up real quick. And you had some extreme pull side players, and then the shifts and all that stuff. There are some teams that really adjusted well and on the fly. I think the Rays, you can attribute a lot to what they did, to just being like, oh, we've got all this data, we can use this, we can deploy this. And some teams that didn't, like, no, what we did worked last year, let's freaking do it again. And since then, it's been a lot of catch up. But now, like you're saying, if it's a team like the Cardinals, they're just trying to catch up. They're not trying to lead the progress like they were in the past.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's been, again, one of their wake-up calls is, okay, it's really impressive when you think about it. 2023 was their first losing season in 15 years. Like, John Mozeliak had never had a losing season in his tenure. That's pretty impressive. But there's been lots of chatter. You know, they haven't really won a playoff series since 2019. They've lost 9 of their last 10 playoff games. They're good enough to compete in the NL Central, but that's it. And a lot of it was just trying to catch up to the division. How can we catch up and stay relevant in the division? And hopefully with expanded playoffs, you know, we get hot at the right time. But that model only is successful for so long in St. Louis. And you can see it now. I know it's early April, but ballpark is already lacking attendance. The ratings are down TV-wise. So a lot of the Cardinals over the last 5 years has been just trying to catch up to trends. And that to me is more of a bigger problem, that an organization with as much history and status and prestige in this industry is focusing on catching up instead of setting trends, developing trends, and continuing to lead and, you know, match teams like the Dodgers, the Braves that have this big following. The Cardinals should be right there, but they're kind of just stuck in their traditional ways.
I will say that declining attendance, declining TV ratings, I'm just going to say it, worst fans in baseball.
Here we go.
Yeah, no, it's everyone's always saying it.
You know how, like, when you come to the stadium for the first time and they read you their scoreboard montage and, like, everything's different. They have this, like, very awkward hype video that I haven't really been that hyped up to see, but it does flash best fans in baseball multiple times in that hype video. Beautiful. Also, For the Lou, which is a hashtag I am absolutely not behind. But I will say it's probably City Connect jersey related.
For the Lou?
For the Lou.
What do British people think about that?
Is Nelly going to be involved in the City Connects?
At this point, Nelly better be there because it's been pretty underwhelming for the last year in St. Louis. A Nelly unveil would be fantastic.
It honestly, when you're talking about how long it's been since they finished under 500, my brain goes to how are the Yankees? We should always be more impressed with the Yankees. I know they haven't won a World Series since before. When was it? It was 2009 was their last one, 2008. But it's still impressive that they have resources, but they still are able to. The last time they finished under 500 was what got them the draft pick that they used for Derek Jeter. That was, you know.
It doesn't matter, Grant. If George was still alive, they never would have let Cano leave. Letting Cano leave, it's all been downhill since then.
That's good. That's a good bit. Is that Francesa or is that a caller in?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good. Well, Francesa's. I don't know. I can't really do Francis. He's got
fungibility. What's that?
New York is like there's so many variants of a New York accent, and I live in New York, and like I can't on cue do it because my default it's like I can see the turn exit, but I'm like nope, doing a Philly accent, and I will just immediately be like yeah, I don't know.
Waiter.
Like, that's me. They'll be like, can you do a New York accent? I'm like, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm going to Wawa. I don't know about that New York accent, man. It's just like I have to like actively pilot the car in there.
Meanwhile, Katie and I have no accent because we're from California, and which that's means true. We are pure. We are better.
I'm no Valley girl at all from LA, you know, Grant. Like, I don't know. Maybe.
It's a hella good point. But I will say that I don't have an accent. I just you know, natural. I'm good at talking.
The California accent is like, no, like, so the thing about, you know, like living in LA is like, you know, kind of like this.
That's, did Swedish? No, what were you doing? That wasn't Californian.
No. Okay.
Producer Brian with a quick what the fuck in the chat. Yeah, no, I don't know, man.
Okay, all right. That's fine, guys. Okay.
There is like a letter that Californians are supposed to drop. I can't remember what it is, but like we there's a letter we don't say. But it's, you know.
I'm doing the alphabet in my head right now, but I don't know which one it is.
I don't know. But we control the media environment. So, you know, we control. Brian now says, speaking of dropping the A's.
Have you guys ever been to Sacramento? I've never been to Sacramento.
What do
you
got?
You've never been to Sacramento?
No. Why would I go to Sacramento?
I had a friend who went to Davis. And he moved to Sacramento afterwards, and he came up with like a really good slogan for Sacramento. Sacramento, it's not that bad. Okay. You know what I mean? Well, like it's you know, hey, it's fine. It's Sacramento. You know, it's hot. It's maybe lacking some of the amenities of a big city. It's Sacramento. It's fine. It's great. Whatever.
Okay, I'll preface this with I live in St. Louis. So, but my parents, they live in Vacaville, which is about 25 minutes from Sacramento. Most of my high school friends live in Sacramento. And every time I have to go to Sacramento, it is the most dramatic groan. I don't want to go. I don't know if I'm just very salty about the A's leaving. I've had a great time at Kings games, but Sacramento is not like a, it's whatever. I don't think is a city that you want.
They have as many major league teams as St. Louis.
That is true. But like I said, I wasn't exactly proclaiming St. Louis as like America's finest city.
I don't mind St. Louis.
It's got bridges.
It has an arch.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
I think it's embarrassing that the A's will be playing in a AAA ballpark. I think it's embarrassing that it's just how this has all gone down. I think it's embarrassing that we talk about this all the time. It's just how the Fisher cabal has been enabled. I just think it's all embarrassing, and I'm sort of happy for Sacramento to have a team for a little bit, but it's really, you know, it's like Charlie Brown's Valentine, where like they scribbled out the names and put Charlie Brown on top and then stick it in his box, and he's like, oh, well, you know, I don't know.
Well, Katie, as a Bay Area native who could beat Mark to a book proposal if you want about the A's, what has been your reaction to Oakland losing the Athletics?
It's been really sad. I mean, I grew up a Giants fan. Grant knows this. Big McCovey Chronicles kind of girl. But
I'm so sorry.
That's absolute sicko shit.
Well, you know, you don't get to where I am now without being a sicko. But I went to A's games all the time because they were really affordable compared to when I was a teenager in the peak of the even year dynasty in San Francisco. A's games for like $12. You could go there. You could get a hot dog and you could sit pretty much anywhere and you could enjoy the product of baseball because the A's were pretty good in the 2010s as well. And it was just much more affordable. And of course, when I became older and of legal drinking age, obviously, we would tailgate and it was just a super fun environment because you'd go there and it'd be like, you know, I love Bay Area sports because it's always an impassioned group, but baseball can often be on the back burner there, especially in Oakland, when you have the Warriors and the Raiders at the time. But it was a different kind of community, and that fan base was really solid, and I really enjoyed those games and going there and getting a bacon-wrapped hot dog after the game. And it just kind of makes me sad that a really loyal fan base that is being portrayed pretty unfairly, I think, by this ownership group in Oakland. And it just makes me sad because the fans deserve so much better. It's not a low market, small market team. It's the Bay Area. Their fans showed up when there was a product to watch. This ownership group put together a product that is unwatchable. What do you expect the fans to do? Now, do I think that they're going to, that the city of Sacramento is going to show up and support this A's team? So do you think Sacramento is going to show up and support the A's? I do, actually. I do think that's going to be a pretty like hot commodity place to be in the middle of summer, because it's actually a nice ballpark for a triple A team. But you had something really good in Oakland, something that you can't replicate. And the whole spin of A's fans didn't care. They don't show up to ball games. Of course, they're not showing up to the ball games. You put a big, like two middle fingers in their face. Why would they show up? Honestly, it just kind of disgusts me that it got to this point, but I'm also not surprised. It's ownership greed at the end of the day. And it sucks because now baseball is losing a very, very deserving fan base.
You get those people in the comments that say, well, you know, when the A's were winning, the attendance was still, you know, low. And yes, but also no, and also shut up. But you would have that with just the progression of, hey, here's Miguel Tejada. You like Miguel Tejada? He's gone. Sonny Gray, you like Sonny Gray? Sonny Gray, that guy's all, he's gone. You know, you would have that just over and over and over again, because that's how they had to keep operating. They had to just trade a guy a year too soon rather than a year too late. They had to do that Branch Rickey thing. And that couldn't have built up a fan base, you know, as well as another team might have done in those situations where you get some longevity, you get some stability. At the same time, it was still like a really good time at the park. It was still an active fan base when they were winning. It's not like you were looking around and going, God, this sucks. It was like, no, it's still really, really cool. And I went to a Tuesday night Royals A's game a couple of years ago. This is before the pandemic, so 18-19, right? So it's Tuesday night. It's cold. It's early in the season, and you have, it's not a full crowd, but it is a passionate crowd. It is a crowd that is banging on stuff. And when Ramon Laureano makes his just rocket throw to third base, doesn't even get the out, the crowd goes nuts, because that's what they're there for. They're like, I hope this guy just uncorks him, his magic hose, and he does it. And that was, Andy, are you laughing? Because we're not doing phrasing anymore, okay? We're not doing phrasing. Anyways, as someone who grew up doing Candlestick, right? And Candlestick to me, do I love Oracle Park and all its amenities and niceness? And yeah, it's beautiful. It's great. Wouldn't trade it in for the world. Does a part of me really miss Candlestick, where you'd show up and shiver and like cook a sausage on a Weber grill and go in and get drunk? Yeah, I miss that a lot. That was a lot of fun. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but I've got bona fides. I went to Candlestick.
When you were saying you were doing Candlestick, I looked at, I thought it was like a drug you were talking about. Like, that sounds something you would have sold out of your dorm in the 90s.
I didn't touch the Candlestick, man. You don't get high off your own supply.
Hey, man, you know where I can get some Candlestick? They're like, yeah, go to Brisby's room. That guy's got a good deal.
That's actually a really good name. If that's going in my sci-fi novel, like, that's going to be what they're doing in 2162. They're all going to be hopped up on Candlestick at the Mars colony.
I think I talked about this on the pod, but I met a guy last year who told me he was writing a novel about a toothbrush that has AI, and the toothbrush becomes sentient, starts a killing spree, and it's called A Brush with Death.
That's not bad. That's not, he should win an award for that, some sort of plaque.
I don't, what does that mean?
Got your ass. Yeah. Got your ass. I don't know. I'd read that. I'd read that. But Candlestick, A's, good product. Sad. I just want, again, $5 billion.
That's it.
I will buy the team. I would be such a freaking good owner. I'd have like, who would I have there? Like Too Short. I'd give him like free tickets behind home plate. Tower of Power.
Too Short would totally show up.
Yeah. Just, you know, I'd get E40 over from the Giants. I'd say, you know what? I know it's a little late, you know, but yeah, I could do all that.
Would your City Connects involve getting Hyphy?
What would the City Connect be for Oakland? That's a good, yeah. What would it be? Katie, help me out on this.
You have to go Kelly Green, right? Because those are classics. I'm a big elephant girl.
Yeah, Stomper.
But you right? And I would put the town.
I would just give it over to, just give it over to Oaklandish, because they, there's nice. A brand here, Andy, called Oaklandish. The brand is everywhere because they're so good at it. And it's just,
nice.
Yeah, it's like a regional pride thing, but their logos are badass. They work with the Oakland Roots, which is sort of like the equivalent of a AAA soccer team. And everyone's got Roots gear. I got Roots gear. You just see it all the time because the branding is so good. So turn it over to them. It's going to be the tree, I think, is the Oaklandish thing. It's got the roots in there. So just turn it over to them.
Oh, I like civic pride. That's nice.
Oakland's great. I freaking love Oakland.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. The whole thing's a bummer. And then there's like, you know, you got the 3 years of purgatory in Sacramento. I mean, I don't know. Ken Rosenthal wrote a thing about this today where like we talked to some players and a lot of them were just like, well, it couldn't be worse than Oakland, you know, which is like,
I read that.
They're not wrong, but like, it's not Oakland they're talking about, right? They're talking about the concept of playing for the A's at the Coliseum, you know? And that's the, I think probably what frustrates folks in the Bay so much is that the city is being conflated with the organization.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I was talking to a couple players in the Cards Clubhouse where they were like, it's weird. Can you imagine like the Yankees coming to play in a AAA ballpark in Sacramento? Like, what are they going to say? Or, you know, if I was going to sign there, like, is it a job? Yeah, but what's kind of the point? And that's kind of how I feel about the next 3 years in Sacramento. What is the point? You're going to continue to just drag along a subpar product, make it even worse. And we don't even know if Vegas is actually a thing. So right. Actually, I respect the level of just like, fuck it, let's go for it and see what happens. But it's a very dangerous game to play with a professional sports franchise. So
yeah, because at least when you had the Expos and then they're split in time in Puerto Rico and they're this weird in limbo franchise, you at least went from old owners to new owners, right? You at least had this. Okay, well, this is going to be different. Now they're in Washington. They got the learners. They're gonna spend. They're gonna be great. And you don't have that in Oakland. Still gonna be Fisher. Still gonna be him. He's still loving those revenue sharing checks. I just can't anticipate him being all in on, you know, whoever, Jackson Holliday or Gunnar Henderson when they come up for free agency. It's like, we're gonna get Gunnar Henderson because we're the freaking A's of Las Vegas. Yeah, and they're not.
Maybe at that point they'll still just be the A's.
They'll be in Salt Lake.
They'll have moved on to Modesto.
Ooh.
Yeah, that is
the Fresno A's. Could they be Fresno?
They could be. I mean, listen, sky's the limit. Medford. I mean, they had a short season A-ball team in Medford, Oregon once. Just move them back, roll it back. It's almost like Portland, just farther south. I think it's sad. I was at the Coliseum to cover the Giants A's exhibition game, and it's legitimately gross. Like, it's just, and it's sad because when I grew up, I've said this on the pod before, but that was when you went to an A's game in the Coliseum, you would just sit there and look around and go, man, this is nice. That was when you were coming from Candlestick and you had the open center field and you took BART right there and you looked around and said, hot dang, you know, there's not as much fog. This is perfect. And then when I was there this time, they had free hot dogs in the press box. And I was scared to eat the free hot dogs, which doesn't really describe me, just not because I distrust the fine employees who are still around the Oakland A's, but just the whole vibe doesn't lend itself to, I'm going to put tubed nitrates in my mouth. Like, I just, a little.
Does the soda machine still dispense RC Cola?
Yes, it does. It does. That's such a treat. RC.
Didn't they find a rat in there like 2 years ago?
A rat in a soda machine?
Yeah.
Rat?
That's
RC stands for rat cola.
Nice. That makes sense. I'm really looking forward to going to Oakland next week for the last time for these reasons.
Yeah, I have so many freaking memories there. And like you, I would take my family there because it's affordable and it's fun. You pop up the canopy, you tailgate there. I love that. So I loved having a baseball experience that's like a date night restaurant and then a greasy diner. You know, like,
yes.
you've got a date night restaurant. Okay, let's get to gussied up and go to Oracle Park and then we'll have the $600 crab sandwich and num num num. And then you had just like, let's go to Joe's and get some frickin' corned beef hash. And I'm gonna miss that.
Yes, the Giants games were like something you take your grandpa to. And A's games, I'd be like, let's go Degenerates, we're rolling out. Mm-hmm. And we'd show up and we would absolutely just destroy the beer lines. You play to your audience. At Oracle Park, I also didn't have, $500 to spend on my two beers, where A's, you could do whatever you want.
The difference with that in Philadelphia is in Philadelphia, your grandfather's an alcoholic who just wants to get tanked at the game.
Well, there's that.
I think that's kind of universal.
Yeah, let's go Birds. Let's go. We're going to find a new center. We're going to be all right.
All right. I believe that we are out of time. So I wanted to thank Katie Wu, the entrant into the Roundtable Cinematic Universe, taking over from Mark Carrig. Didn't even notice he was gone. Like, just straight up. I wasn't like, oh, what would Mark say about that? I didn't care. I didn't care. You had it covered.
He so. Gone.
Yeah, he gone.
Oh, wow. Look, our guest isn't looking at Slack the whole time.
Here's the thing about timesheets. All right. We will be back next week.
Maybe we'll get to WrestleMania next week. Do you guys watch WrestleMania?
I did not. You know, not a WrestleMania girl. I'm sure you're shocked.
Good Mania. Yeah. It's good Mania.
No, I was busy watching I Think You Should Leave for the 736th time. There's nuance there. This last time, what I kept repeating for the 2 days afterwards was metal. Doesn't mean anything to you. It'll mean something to some of the roundtable heads. So
when you watch it for the seventh time, is that when the jokes start?
Man, you got the layers of this. I could write it. I could do a whole podcast on that show.
We actually should do that sometime. Like an off-season pod where I have to watch that shit for four seasons. Then we just
fight. You're just taking notes on why this isn't funny, and I'm taking notes on why
I
it
wish
is.
It was funny. Everyone who I think you are funny, Grant. Like, I think you're funny in person, on pod, and in print. That show is not funny. I don't get it.
All right. Calm, focus. Tim Britton is in next week. He will be a part of the extended roundtable universe. We'll talk about stuff then, baseball, because that's what we do. See you then. Thanks for listening.
I was very wrong.
I hope this guy just uncorks him, just his magic hose, and he does it.